الله اكبر من امريكا واسلحتها، الله اكبر من طائرات الاف 35، الله اكبر مما هو دونه. فلما نخشى ما دونه ولا نخشى الله؟ انا قلت لمراتي ولا ابني كل يوم نفس الحاجه يعملها وما عملهاش، انا هتضايق هزعل، يمكن اطلعها، يمكن اطلب ابني من البيت. فما بالنا، الله يقول لنا كل يوم عشرات المرات الله أكبر لا تنسى، الله أكبر لا تنسى، الله أكبر من كل شيء. لا صهاينة ولا أمريكا ولا بريطانيا وفرنسا وألمانيا، الله أحق أن نخشاه، الله أحق أن نخشاه.
Isn't that so heartfelt and touching? He's crying to Allah as he's on his way to go and attack and kill people. Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. Iran's supreme leader came out with some really shocking news. Well, it's shocking if you don't understand what the heck is actually going on over there, but to those of us with common sense, it's not that shocking. Supreme Leader, he has been angry tweeting, no kidding, for the last, 6 hours straight. He does this more than Trump. I've compared them before in the past. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Where are you guys checking in from? Good to see you guys in here. Make sure that the audio is nice, crisp, and clean for you. I heard that YouTube was having some streaming issues last night. I am aware of those. Everything, because I'm dual streaming over here, everything went just fine through X and everything else, so you guys should be better. He needs a GoFundMe for a better phone. Well, he doesn't get a phone in jail where he's going, and good news, his entire family actually ended up getting deported, or they're on their way. The White House ended up putting something out yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw this, but I was like, that's hilarious. His entire family. Watch this. Wait for it. If you haven't seen this yet, it's well worth it. White House, no kidding. White House actually tweeted this out yesterday, and it just kind of makes me die inside every time I see it. The White House, 6 one-way tickets for Muhammad's wife and 5 kids. Final boarding call coming soon. They legitimately put that out yesterday. Navajo Nation, New Mexico. Hey, that's freaking rad. I love that, man. That's the first time I've actually think I got a shout out from the Navajo Nation, where they're coming from. That's great, man. That makes me smile. Flint, Michigan needs a drink of water. Yeah, I suppose so. Denmark, hit that like button, ladies and gentlemen. Good. Now, do me another favor, smash that like button. If you haven't yet, make sure you guys are following this channel. I need to give a special shout out to Travis Howley. If you guys don't know who Travis Howley is, let me get his actual description. He's worked on national security intelligence, and he has been all over the media. He is really, really intelligent human being. He ended up coming from the Air Force side of the house. As much as I will trash on the Air Force, it's all in good fun. I love them to death. I think they're good-hearted human beings. I've got nothing against the Air Force. Just, you know, they just are what they are. But anyways, he ended up putting out some really good poop on this gentleman that ended up conducting this bombing. He goes by Mohammed Solomon. You guys remember him, the one that went over and just tore apart the pro-Israeli rally with Molotov cocktails over the weekend, right? Like kind of a dirtbag turd, not really a big fan of this guy. But Howley actually dug into his personal background and his history, and he found some really interesting connections on him, claims that he's connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. It's also really apparent that this individual, before he came to the United States of America, was radicalized and continued to follow radicalization like online. So there's no doubt at this point in time that this was a blatant terror attack motivated by radical Islamic ideology, period. There's no other way to like get about it, beat around the bush. It is what it is. Can't deport him fast enough. No, you most certainly can. You can deport him just as fast as you want. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's get this up on your screen. Let's go over what Travis Howley ended up finding, because it's really, really interesting. This is Muhammad's Facebook profile. Take a look at that. This is the gentleman that ended up conducting the bombing. This is his Facebook profile. And this is also a lot of the things he ends up seeing. He says his Facebook profile offers early insights to his worldwide viewed religious ideology and pro-Islamic messaging, claimed to be an accountant in Egypt. He has 311 friends, which is very, very important here. Arabic quotes that end up being on his header: open your heart to the Quran and you will be blessed in this life and the next. His profile photo adds yet another message: oh Allah, unite the ranks of the Muslims. He says his Facebook friends and follower pages number in the hundreds, but they're not random. His feed is saturated with Islamist preacher, Muslim Brotherhood content, and anti-secular conspiracy pages and martyr glorifying slogans. And there you have the examples. I love the Brotherhood. Down with military rule. Fans of Sheikh Hazim Salah Ismail. And Eyes of the Muslim Brotherhood. Look at all of those that he ends up following. Again, when I talk to you guys about domestic terrorism and homegrown violent extremists, this guy doesn't quite fit the bill. But again, he came into the country illegally, overstayed his visa, and ended up getting granted another one. So I want to remember that on you guys. Now, for those that don't think he was motivated by what's taking place over inside Israel, over inside Gaza, you also have another thing coming. Despite the fact that he ended up attacking people that were literally protesting for the release of the hostages, Hamas is still currently holding on to it. What are we now, 606 days? Sun Wukong says, don't put down bees, Matt. I had a Marine machine gunner in my corporal's course that gave his presentation on quantum physics. Tism's not equal to stupidity. No, I don't think that at all. I don't think tism is equal to stupidity. No, that's silly. No, you have some of the most intelligent people on earth. Maybe I was misunderstood in some way, shape, and form. I don't know, brother. I'm with you, though. Like, some of the most intelligent dang people on the planet. I got ADHD and was told I got a touch of the tism myself. So we'll see how that works out. But yeah, check this out. I, on the Muslim Brotherhood, ended up posting some pretty good pro-Hamas content all the way back in January of 2015. And again, this is the type of things that this guy would end up following. Now, if you don't recognize this guy that's up on the screen, he would be one of your random ISIS fighters. Or I'm sorry, not ISIS, Hamas fighters. Dear God, Matt. Woo! Gotta get it together this morning, brother. Woo! My goodness. All right, another post, page by Solomon, right, of the Muslim Brotherhood shows a mass armed fighter. Again, here's another one of some of the radical crap that he likes to follow and check out and love. Let's see, and we can go back to some more of the original content that he ends up coming up with. Let's see here. He also had another profile, all right, all the way back, and he tried to start this one up, but it seems that he started a new one when he came here into the United States to kind of probably throw some people off. But again, it's pretty obvious that he's just got Muslim Brotherhood love and radical Islamic love. This is his new his new cleansed profile, excuse me. This is his cleansed profile that he has right here. Joined November of 22, right around the time he actually ended up coming into the States, if I remember right. So yeah, kind of like a pile of garbage. Let's just not lie about it. Like, is what it is. I can't express to you enough. Oddly enough, it also appears like he has his email address registered with Xvideos, which, for those of you unfamiliar with the matter, is a porn site. Just throwing that out there. And on top of all of that, I think Travis does a very good job in calling him out. Let me put this up on here. He says, oh, a Muslim Brotherhood terrorism supporter has his personal email registered to a porn site. I'm pretty sure pulling your pork while looking at naked Western, kafir is haram. No? Yeah, he nailed it. That's exactly what it is. It's haram. You shouldn't be doing that crap. So this is what he's got going on. It also says that his home over inside Colorado Springs, which he redacted the address at, is associated with a woman named Hayem S. El Gamal, who, just like Muhammad, may have also arrived in the U.S. mid to late November. According to her LinkedIn, I earned my Bachelor of Science from Tanta University in Egypt. This is possibly Muhammad's wife. He ends up sharing the information. You guys probably, I'll blow it up so you guys can pause it later if you want to go over that in particular. You're more than welcome to. He ended up pulling the source from LinkedIn. This is the residence in which he lived here in Colorado Springs. And you have Hayem El Gamal. Yep, there she is. There's where she ended up studying and all that other crap that ends up going into it. So there's your scoop. He is 1,000%, despite of what everybody else is trying to say, a freaking Muslim extremist, whether or not they want to admit it or not. That's exactly what he is. All right. Am I blocked? No, sir. I do not believe any of you guys are blocked. That's just kind of the way it goes today. Nobody's blocked. You should be allowed to chat, but there is certain words that are not allowed to be said on this channel, and those words have been blocked. So if you're trying to use some inappropriate language, maybe it's not allowing you to do it in the chat. I don't know. All right. Now, Kash Patel ended up coming out. For those of you who are unaware, two Chinese nationals actually ended up getting arrested inside of the United States yesterday, being accused of agro-terrorism. This is kind of a big deal, actually. I looked over it a little bit yesterday, dug into a little bit about this particular fungus that they actually snuck in the United States. I know it's just a fungus, right? And we also can sit, we can make fun of you know, the people at CBP sitting inside the airport pulling out, you know, the different crap. But this is actually a really big deal. And Kash Patel actually ended up putting out a statement on it earlier. He said, "Now I can confirm that the FBI arrested a Chinese national with the United States who allegedly smuggled a dangerous biological pathogen into the country. The individual, Yingqing Jin, is alleged to have smuggled a dangerous fungus called Fusarium graminearum, which is an agro-terrorist agent, into the U.S. to research at the University of Michigan, according to his own words. The fungus can cause a disease called head blight, a disease in wheat, barley, maize, and rice, causing significant health issues in both humans and livestock." Now, here's the interesting part about the particular fungus. It will infect those different plants, and then you have all of those crops that end up going out. But that fungus, when it actually goes in and it infects the plants, infects whatever it is that they're producing that we eat, and that also causes major health issues in human beings. So it's a problem, and it does rapidly spread. And they brought this crap here in the United States. Now, he said it was being brought in order to study at the University of Michigan, but there's a problem. He was already studying this back in his home country of China, and he is a member of the CCP. Evidence also indicates that Jin had expressed loyalty to the CCP and had received funding from the Chinese government for similar work on this pathogen in China. His boyfriend, Jin's boyfriend, Zhuang Lu, also charged with the complaint, works at a Chinese university where he conducts research on the same pathogen. Lu is alleged to have first lied, then admitted to have smuggled the fungus into America through the Detroit Metropolitan Airport so that he too could conduct the research at the University of Michigan. Both individuals have been charged with conspiracy, smuggling goods in the United States, false statement, and visa fraud. So they're not going anywhere for a while. Sun Wong Kong says, "My bad, dude, there's nothing for you to apologize about, my friend. Nothing at all. It's perfectly okay." And here's the crux. Now we're going to ignore all the crap over here in the United States for a day, or for a minute here. We're going to go and we're going to start talking about Iran, because Iran has been kind of silent over the last several weeks, it seems, you know, minus what Axios reported on and several other places. But, you know, for, I don't know, I think months now, the Trump administration has been saying that we are really close to a deal with Iran. It's been pissing off Israelis. It's been pissing off a lot of people in the United States of America that know Iran shouldn't have a nuclear weapon. Now, just for context, Iran did sign onto the NPT all the way back in 1967, and it was just ratified, and they're still signatories of it today. As signatories of the NPT, they are not allowed to have nuclear weapons. They're not. They're actually supposed to be given up enrichment as well. But, you know, Iran, they interpret a certain article of it as they're allowed, right? So the IAEA has been going in there and conducting their own inspections. That's why we get the IAEA reports from Iran that ended up coming out and saying that they have 600 pounds of enriched uranium beyond 60%. And now the latest one ends up coming out and it pushed it north of 900, saying that Iran is increasingly developing enriched uranium to the rate of at least one nuclear, like enough enriched uranium for one nuclear warhead a month. And that set the world ablaze. But just the other day, we even heard the Trump administration come out and say, no, we're really close to a deal. And yesterday, this is probably one of the most obnoxious things I ended up seeing, was Axios ended up putting out a report. Oh man, why do you gotta be this way? Why do you gotta be up in my face like this? Get out of here. Axios ended up putting out a report, and the New York Post and CNN and pretty much everybody ended up like coming in and reposting off of it and saying that the Trump admin had offered to allow Iran to enrich uranium. U.S. offers Iran nuclear deal allowing temporary uranium enrichment. That's not true. That's a lie. And I stated that, like, be careful, look at their source and check out who it is and what exactly it is that they're saying, because it's not going to necessarily be true. And I've got major problems with Iran for doing, or excuse me, I got major problems with Axios for putting this information out there. Saved a screenshot of their original article. It's right here. Ended up sharing it this morning over on X. Nuclear deal proposal. The U.S. gave Iran on Saturday would allow limited low-level uranium enrichment on Iranian soil for a to-be-determined period of time, Axios has learned. It didn't even state who they learned it from. This is how lazy the media has gotten. And they're going out, and again, Axios learned it. From where? Iran. It's later reported that Iranian officials had leaked the information to him. So you're getting this information from Iran, the same people that we can't even trust with their current levels of enrichment under the NPT. So Trump had to come out and make a statement. And man, was it freaking spot on. He said, we will not allow any enrichment of uranium. I say that again. Donald Trump, again, just came out, stated, I quote, we will not allow any enrichment of uranium. This caused Khamenei, the Ayatollah of Iran, to start spinning the hell out over on X again. Ayatollah ended up coming out. Yeah, you say Axios. Now, here's the thing. Axios is a U.S.-based company. I believe they're over in Virginia. And when it comes to matters of national security, believe it or not, your free speech are really, really protected. And so they can basically lie their butts off as long as they're acting in, how do I want to say this? They're acting in quasi-good faith, right? And you better be able to prove that they're not, right? Because I don't think you can. That's what they're hiding behind. That's Matt's opinion on that. But anyways, yeah, Khamenei went crazy. He said Tehran will not abandon its uranium enrichment work. He added, today we are capable of producing nuclear fuel starting from the mine all the way to the power plant, and just continued to double down that they're going to enrich. But the crazy part to me is when we go over and we actually take a look at the different things that Khamenei has been saying. I mean, Khamenei has been losing his freaking mind lately. I try to say this, try to throw it out there. I don't know why he is the way he is. It's like that, you know, Michael Scott thing when he's yelling at Toby, like, I don't know why you are the way that you are. But let's go take a look at this. And this is, again, I have to zoom in on this because you're not going to believe the amount of crap he puts out. When I say, like, the Ayatollah ends up angry tweeting more than Trump, I'm not kidding. Last one that ended up coming out was about an hour ago. He said, based on a definitive divine decree, the Zionist regime is collapsing. But we go all the way down and look at all of these tweets that he ends up putting out over the last, like, 6 hours, I believe. Yeah, 6 hours before it ends up 7 hours. Okay, then it jumps all the way back to May 28th. He talks about former imam's demise. He says, thanks to the intelligence of our youth and the dedication of our scientists, Iran has succeeded in achieving a complete nuclear fuel cycle. Today, we are capable of producing nuclear fuel starting from the mine all the way to the power plant. So again, he comes out stating that, hey, look, we don't need any outside help. This is him saying we don't need outside help. We can run uranium, like we can mine it, we can enrich it, and we can do whatever the hell we want with it. Said the number of countries in the world that have achieved a complete nuclear fuel cycle is perhaps fewer than the numbers of fingers on a person's hand, person's two hands. The Iranian youth and scientists have achieved this. Says there is one point that is a key element in nuclear industry, and that is uranium enrichment. Our enemies have focused all their attention on this very process of uranium enrichment. He says, enemies have concentrated their efforts on our enrichment, blah, 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 because we would be dependent on them to obtain their fuel. So he thinks that we want to do this so that Iran has to come to us to obtain the fuel. No, the United States and the West doesn't want him to have the ability to enrich uranium because he's trying to develop nuclear freaking weapons. He takes it a step further, though, and this is kind of what makes me laugh inside. Says the U.S.'s main demand is that they don't want Iran to even have a nuclear industry. They want you to be reliant on them for radiopharmaceuticals, energy, desalination equipment, and in tens of other critical sectors. Thousands of nuclear scientists and researchers have been trained in Iran. Should we disappoint them, make them unemployed, and take away their hope in their country's future? The rude, isolant U.S. leaders want this. They're opposed to progress. This dude is literally trying to claim and lean on jobs in Iran for nuclear scientists for their ability to continue to enrich uranium. Irish Ghost says, how long do you think it will take Ukraine to develop their own long-range missiles with the help from Germany? It actually shouldn't take that long. The hardest part is going to be like building them and putting them together and sourcing the different explosives and things like that that are going to be going into those long range weapons along with some of the other tech that's going in there. But I have a feeling that working with Germany, that they're going to have that figured out. They also didn't announce where they were going to be building those and slapping them together at. They just said that Ukraine was going to be knocking on its own. So I guess that's like a good thing there, right? A few months ago, one of the U.S. presidents said he would dismantle the nuts and bolts of Iran's nuclear industry if he could. Of course, he admitted that he couldn't. Those in power today, the Zionists and the Americans, should know that they can't do a damn thing in this area. Now, that quote by him, to me, is pretty flipping significant because he's saying that the U.S. and Israel, and I quote, can't do a damn thing in this area. End quote. That is the first time I've actually seen the Ayatollah cuss or heard him cuss. He's very adamant about this. He is not going to allow an agreement where Iran is not enriching uranium. And he made that perfectly clear. And today, Trump came out and he made it perfectly clear. Iran will not be allowed to enrich uranium. So that brings us to the impasse that I've been stating for freaking weeks. First, my question is, why has the Trump admin been saying that they're so close to a deal for so long when clearly they haven't been? Second, why have we been waiting this long? Every single month, Iran enriches enough uranium for another nuclear weapon. Why have we not attacked them? Why has this not been taken care of? Well, I got a feeling it's coming, and it's coming on very, very fast. When it happens, it's not going to be announced. It's just going to start. I don't see us giving them a warning. I don't see Trump making another statement about this. I don't see any of that. This right here is the end of discussion talks that I think we've been kind of waiting on. It's just basically an end of discussion. Khamenei said, in the current nuclear talks that are being mediated by Oman, the U.S.'s proposal is 100% against the spirit of we can. I'll say that again. In the current nuclear talks that are being mediated by Oman, the U.S.'s proposal is 100% against the spirit of we can. What the U.S. is demanding is that you should have no nuclear industry at all and be dependent on them. To the American side and others, we say, why are you interfering or trying to say whether Iran should have uranium enrichment or not? That's none of your business. Ladies and gentlemen, the talks are dead. As we've been saying for the longest time, the talks are dead. Iran's going to have to get bombed. And the question is when is it going to go down? How large of a part is Israel going to take in it? How large of a part is the United States of America going to take into it? And what the hell are we going to do in order to get rid of those nuclear facilities, particularly the enrichment ones that are buried deep underground? They've got facilities that they haven't even announced, the IAEA. So it's possible that we don't even hit all of them. And also, as Khamenei just stated, you also have to worry about the human aspect of the thousands of scientists that are now employed by Iran that are doing this work. Why wait? I'm with you there. Talks were never alive. We knew that. No, they were alive and they were happening, but I don't think they were going anywhere. So the question is what kind of like took so long that allowed all of this crap to come out? And why all of the misinformation, right? Like why all the misinformation coming out from Axios? Why all the and that's not the first time, by the way, that we ended up hearing that the Trump administration said that they'd allow Iran to enrich uranium. Like that, I've been fighting that freaking battle for the longest time. And every single time I slap it down, people are coming back and stating that they did. It's bullshit. I'm kind of tired of it. Now we're going to go over and we're going to go into Syria. And we're going to talk about an airstrike that reportedly took place by Israel. Now, what you're looking at is a military airfield, right? Just kind of like north, like it's actually like a little bit north northeast of the Lebanese northernmost border, and it's in a place called Hama, if I remember correctly. I'll put it up on the map here in just a sec. But this airstrike over on this military base, and people are blaming it on Israel, comes one day after rockets ended up coming out of Syria and going into Israel, specifically over in the southern Golan Heights. Israel ended up answering back with artillery fire yesterday, and there was reports of some explosions and some gunfire going off outside the presidential palace where, what's his dang name, Jelani is living, right? Let me grab this and put it up on the map for you guys so you can see where this took place, because it's a lot deeper than anything else. And this is... how do I want to say this? I'll show you guys where the rockets ended up originating from and where all this crap ended up coming out of. So let's go in over here into the Middle East. Let me take you guys over into Syria, and we're going to focus over here, right down here in this little southern area. Now, the rockets that were fired at Israel yesterday originated down here in the south. And again, Israel ended up answering back, and that was that. We did hear some reports of, like I said, some explosions and things that were happening outside of Damascus, right, over by where the presidential palace is. Those rockets that they ended up shooting at Israel yesterday, again, fell reportedly in the southern portion of the Golan Heights. But the interesting part is when all of that was taking place yesterday, you also had a ballistic missile that was shot out of Yemen at Israel. And that ballistic missile ended up getting intercepted. No idea over where. I didn't even bother looking that deep into it. But that happened. And now we have another reported airstrike that's taking place over inside Syria. Now, Israel has said that they're not going to tolerate any incoming rockets from Israel or from Syria. They're not going to deal with it. And I know for a fact that there's no way Netanyahu is happy that Trump went over and shook hands with Jelani. There's just no freaking way. I think that he ended up doing it so that they can find a place to put these refugees that are going to end up getting crapped out of Gaza here in a little bit. Blue Dragon coming in, gifting out 20 Speak the Truth memberships. Hell yeah, Blue Dragon. Greatly appreciate you blessing the chat that way this morning. So here we go. This place right here in Hama. This is where that airfield was located, and they end up striking it. Now, I'm going to have to go back and reference and double check, but I'm pretty sure that there was a chemical production plant for chemical weapons that was also down inside Hama. And I don't believe it was on the list of one of the places that Israel ended up going after. If that's the case, it is possible that that is something that Israel was targeting in this strike, that they ended up getting new intelligence that was located on the airfield. That's possible. I think that Israel might start ramping up their attacks on those other sites I ended up reporting. Over 1,000 sites. Everybody thinks that Israel ended up destroying all of the chemical weapons over inside Syria back in, what was it, like November, December? Went right before Jelani ended up taking power, right after Jelani ended up taking power. And a report ended up coming out saying that over 1,000 production and storage facilities are still in operation or still intact over inside of Syria. Did a big report on it. Patrick Loudon says, did you see U.S. approved Syrians' plans of absorbing foreign fighters in their army? Came out a couple days ago. No, I did not see that, Pat. That would have been really good for me to read. Now I got to read up on that because I'm really curious what foreign fighters they're talking about. And to be clear, it's not Syria's plan. Like, let's be clear on this. Syria, right now, technically doesn't have a president. They have a terrorist that is in charge of their country. I'm going to say this as clear as possible. He is a terrorist. That is a fact. Declared by the United States of America, he fought for Al-Qaeda in Iraq. He started the al-Nusra Front. He started HTS. He was friends with al-Baghdadi. And he's got a tie to the freaking bloodline of Muhammad. And one of his main goals in fighting inside of HTS was to overthrow the Assad regime and to declare a Sunni Islamic caliphate in Syria. Imagine that. He wanted to keep the caliphate centered in Syria. We've seen ethnic cleansing. We've seen Christians being killed. We've seen Druze being killed. We have seen, Assyrians, like, whatever. Pick one. If you're not under the radical ideology, they're going after him. So this man isn't the president. He isn't technically in charge of the country. If I put up a map of how much terrain he actually controls, you'd be kind of shocked. He comes over. He controls portions of Damascus, but all of this shit, this is all like the Wild West up here, man. All of this crap up over in like northwestern Syria, that's all like the Wild West. He doesn't control it at all. He's going to try, right? But he doesn't. But he also has the backing of Turkey. And now the president of the United States has gone over and taken pictures with him. And the man also went over to France and met with Macron. Kind of a problem in Matt's opinion, right? He is being portrayed as if he is official leader of this country, and I don't believe he is. I don't believe people should take him for that either, and I'm actually happy that Israel's not doing it. Like, they just can't accept that. You know, you can try to cut deals with him, you can try to do everything, but you can't accept that. And I hope that Israel finishes off all those chemical weapon production plants and gets rid of them, along with the storage plants. I hope they just open up sortie after sortie after sortie. I really do. Now, the most shocking part to me about all of this crap goes to the timing of yesterday's attack. The fact that they both happened within a very short time frame of each other, the ballistic missile attack out of Yemen, and then also the rocket launch coming out of Syria. There's a caveat to this, and it's something that a lot of people need to understand. HTS, right? HTS and Iran did not get along. The IRGC was backing up the Assad regime. I'll say that again. The IRGC was backing up the Assad regime. And clearly, Jelani was fighting against the Assad regime, so they don't get along. Now, if it's confirmed that HTS ended up launching those rockets yesterday over into the Golan Heights, that would be a big deal. Because that would mean that Jelani and the Ayatollah decided the enemy of my enemy is my friend. and they're going to be happy and they're going to be working together. It is possible that the IRGC, because they have lots of little, like, smaller terror organizations all over the Middle East, it is possible that the IRGC ended up, employing one of their smaller organizations in order to conduct the attack to cause more destability in the region. I don't know. But that short of a time frame together of the rocket attack and the ballistic missile attack tells me that they might have been coordinated. And if they were coordinated, that's a huge deal, because that means Iran is looking at influencing Syria yet again. And they're going to try to get their way. So they're not slowing down. It also means that Jelani has become extremely dangerous to Israel. And that's something that people need to pay attention to. If you're not paying attention to these minute details, ladies and gentlemen, you absolutely need to be. Because Iran is not going to fully come out and state most of the crap that they end up doing. You have to look at people's actions, not just their words, and what they're doing. And so when we have what appears to be a coordinated attack in between, we'll call them Syrian militias, insurgents, terrorists, I don't care, pick one, and the Houthis, you got to ask yourself whether or not Iran and HTS is now coordinating. And until you rule that out, you need to keep it as a strong possibility. It would certainly seem, with the firefights and the strikes that took place, or the explosions reportedly taking place over by the presidential palace yesterday, followed by airstrikes taking place at a military airfield in northwestern Syria, that Israel definitely feels that way. Blue Dragon says, what is the damage assessment on the Kerch Bridge? I know, off topic, yet very interested. Thanks. Yeah, it is off topic. Kerch Bridge damage assessment. So my personal opinion versus what the SBU stated, and this is something that I was fighting a lot yesterday. SBU stated that they had SBU had stated that this operation had been in the workings for months and that they had placed charges down at the base of the support columns that are rising up and holding up the bridge. Now, the problem is that the bridge is still standing. Math-wise, it takes about 350 pounds of TNT per column. I ended up doing the square footage and all of that, ended up doing the math on all that, how big those charges would be. Those are some big charges, ladies and gentlemen. It's a big, big charge. And that is per support pile that ends up coming off of each one of those bridges support in order to take that sucker out. The SBU said that the first explosion went off at 4:44 a.m., 0444 a.m., that is when the first detonation took place. They said the first detonation, so there's several. Now, if you're going to be targeting that bridge and you're going to be going after those things, you're going to want to make sure that those charges are properly set. I had Nate Vance on the show yesterday. He brought up something very, and I'm going to get to your answer here. And he brought up something that, I don't want to call it an oversight, but it was something that was eye-opening. That a gentleman over inside of Crimea ended up getting caught by Russia manufacturing explosives. And it's thought that that man that ended up getting caught was manufacturing explosives, likely for the Kerch Bridge. Now, if that's the case, what this very possibly could be is that Ukraine got compromised on this operation. Ukraine heard about it, detonated what they have, and then swam that drone in there and tried slamming it in the bridge to get like a last minute impact, if humanly possible. Bottom line is, I highly doubt the SBU is going to come out and tell you the absolute truth on it. But what I do know is not nearly enough explosives were used. I don't know how many place charges they had, but the fact that the bridge is still standing tells me that they either only had them next to one post at the time, one pile at the time, or even if they had it next to several piles at the time, that it wasn't properly constructed, it wasn't properly anchored, it wasn't properly affixed to the target itself, especially underwater. You've got that water acting as a buffer space, it absorbs a lot of energy. Oh, by the way, it's under pressure of all of those millions of gallons of water, right? So that's an issue, right, when you start looking at it. But the bridge is still standing. When I ended up running through the assessment yesterday and ended up talking about it, I don't think those place charges were, to be perfectly honest, I don't even know if they were place charges. And here's why. I wasn't going to talk on this morning, but you asked. And so I'm just going to throw it out there before we jump back over there. This is a two-scale-ish, right, reference, right, of what those different piles and things like that look like. This is the largest explosion that I would have known of, which would have been this 1,100-kilogram drone. Somebody pointed out they're not going to use Comp B. They're going to use tritretinoin. I'd agree with that. Yes, absolutely. That was just me throwing numbers in there real quick for Comp B. Does it matter? Sure. Yeah, whatever. I could have provided figures for both of those. So my apologies. You are absolutely correct on that. Whoever that was in the comment section, good call. But the issue is this, that you have an 1,100 kilogram drone. And he also brought up that they're not going to rely on one cap. He's absolutely correct. But I'm not going to end up, sorry, before we get into this, I got to nerd out for a sec. If you end up having multiple caps that are detonating at the same time inside of this, you end up having those explosive waves coming together and clapping and causing like a different type of shearing effect. And that'll end up like going out and doing other things. I made this as blunt, simple as humanly possible because that was the point of this, trying to explain to you that it doesn't matter what's in there. It doesn't matter those little tiny specifics. It's not enough explosives to take the sucker out. Point being, this within itself and the amount of charge to target contact and the amount of explosives that would have actually been directed in this pile would have been enough to destroy one pile if this drone got close enough and hit a pile. Now, the area of the bridge that they ended up targeting actually had dozens of these things sticking out from underneath it. It was a much larger portion. This is an example on a smaller section of the bridge, a smaller section of piles that would have been supporting it. This amount is not nearly enough to take out even the two support piles, one to the left and one to the right of this initial detonation. It is enough to damage them. It is enough to cause some damage. It is enough to possibly cause some spalling and things of that nature. People are stating that, well, maybe there's rust damage and everything else. This is also Russia we're talking about, the same place that built Chernobyl. Go walk around Ukraine and listen to everybody go, at the Ukraine, like when shit just falls apart. And that's because it was all built underneath like Russian rule and you don't want to lean on stuff because it's going to fall apart. So, do I think that the Russians give a crap whether or not one of these piles ended up getting knocked out and they're going to continue to risk people's lives by driving over that bridge? Absolutely, I do. The question of whether or not it needs to be assessed, the bridge needs to get shut down, that's not a doubt whatsoever. But the fact that the bridge is still up and operating, I'm going to tell you that right there. A lot of the information is coming out saying that multiple lanes ended up getting shut down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I haven't seen any real confirmation on that other than some different Telegram chats. I saw a Telegram chat yesterday that said a section of the bridge was cracked and they got to figure out how to repair it. Again, haven't seen any official reports or evidence of that whatsoever. All I'm seeing is things that are coming through the Telegram chats. That's really about it. Other than that, I can tell you that the amount of explosives that ended up getting used was not enough to cripple that bridge. It just wasn't. That is just math and science. They didn't have enough explosives down at the bottom to cripple the bridge. Just didn't happen. And the fact that that guy ended up getting arrested yesterday over inside of Crimea, he's probably dead or being tortured like as we speak, tells me that it's possible that this operation got compromised and that Ukraine just ended up blasting the bridge because they had to and sent that swimmer in as kind of like a last resort in order to knock it out. I doubt they ended up sending divers down there to place those charges. Otherwise, we'd have had a much more significant impact. Now, to get back to Syria and to get back to Israel is a whole other discussion because we're going to touch on Russia here in a sec. So following that airstrike over inside Syria, we now have the U.S. ambassador to Turkey and special envoy to Syria, Tom Barak, who's going into Tel Aviv to meet with Israeli officials, including their foreign minister, Gideon Saar, and defense minister, Katz. So that's good to know. So the United States is immediately taking interest in it. Now we're going to go over and we're going to touch on what Russia's been up to. I told you guys about the effects that ended up happening over on the freaking Kerch Bridge or the Crimean Bridge. And wouldn't you know it, Shoigu is back inside of North Korea. So there you can see him walking in. Now, last night I reported that North Korean weapons had made their way over the front lines inside of Ukraine and were being employed by Russian forces. Also, the significance of that drone strike this weekend over inside of Russia can't be overstated enough. Russia is going to have to come up with a way to A, get more weapons, and B, get more manpower up over on the front line because they're currently getting their freaking teeth kicked in between the attack on the bridge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, confirmed so far because we have this different satellite imagery. Let me go ahead and put it up on your screen. I'm going to let you guys know that there is Russian bloggers, Russian reporters, everybody now that's coming out with an excuse that these satellite images exist, stating that these weren't even real bombers, that these were shell aircraft that got made up by Russia that they ended up staging. That what you're seeing is not destroyed Russian bombers. And I assure you that they are. Shoigu. Yeah. Shoigu from Russia. So I assure you that they are. These are actual freaking bombers that ended up getting taken out. Here you can see three TU-95s that were destroyed, an AN-12, And another TU-95 up here. So just in this one image, you can see they're good. This TU-160, though, that's still operational. You can see it sitting over there, just kind of in the center of the tarmac, just hanging out on like a little side strip. But again, these reports or these images ended up coming out that kind of like show and confirm that they, in fact, did strike these aircraft as they had stated they did, despite all of the rumors stating that it didn't happen. And you could actually see how significant those strikes are. Just knocking out one of those bombers is a freaking embarrassment. U.S. had this happen back in, I want to say it was 2012. The Taliban overran a particular airfield in Afghanistan, ended up destroying a bunch of Harrier jets and all sorts of crap. That's a black eye. I'm not ashamed to admit that. This, within itself, is a huge black eye on Russia. Massive black eye. The difference is that the United States of America didn't sit back and say, well, you know what? Those weren't actual aircraft. They were just there to, you know, draw the Taliban out. They're not actual aircraft that ended up getting destroyed. My ass. These are actual aircraft that ended up getting freaking hit. Their explosives, their fuel, all of that crap ended up causing massive destruction of the aircraft. Even in this image right here, this satellite image, you can still see crap that's on fire right up over here, just off to the left of that trail by this destroyed plane off to the edge of that tarmac. So yeah, there's no excuse trying to say that this isn't what exactly happened. They 100% happened. Full BDA has yet to actually come out on how many aircraft ended up getting destroyed. Ukraine ended up putting out over 40 aircraft, ended up getting smashed, and that appears to be true. The other portion of it that appears to be true, let's see. Oh, here it is. Yeah, because for full transparency, I had to put this out. The channel's name is literally Russian News. And they said, and I quote, the Russian strategic bombers that Ukraine and the West claimed to have struck inside Russia turned out to be nothing but decoy phantoms. The company Maxar has released satellite images of several Russian air bases revealing the presence of dummy elements. And they end up putting this out along with it. Now, I want to let you guys know that these images that are being circulated online trying to state that they didn't strike real aircraft, et cetera, these are all from early May. So these satellite images that are being put out about the Russian aircraft being perfectly intact and not being smashed by Ukraine came out in May, obviously before that attack ended up taking place. Tom Bone says, the drone strike was Ukraine's Doolittle raid because it proved that they could strike Russia anytime, anywhere within their territory. You know, Tom, I'd push back on that statement just in one slight little bit with the anytime, anywhere. As long as they have more of those capabilities inside that country, you're absolutely right. Anytime, anywhere. If they ended up throwing all their eggs in one basket as kind of a litmus test to see if they could pull this crap off, not so much. And so, in Matt's opinion, their way to strike Russia anytime, anywhere goes down to the employment of those different cruise missiles, the fact that their drone strikes have been, like, of their own, like, Ukraine-built drones have gone, like, thousands of kilometers deep inside of Russia and taken out, like, strategic infrastructure. So I think that proves that they're able to do that. I think the fact that the Kremlin ended up putting so much dang security over the Red Square for the Victory Day parade, the fact that they ended up taking so many precautions on that goes to show that if Ukraine wanted, even Russia believes that they could attack them anytime and anywhere. So I think Russia is slightly scared. The issue for me, the big issue for me is that Russia is going to respond. And the question is how is Russia going to respond? Because the word on the street is that they're going to use the Oreshnik ballistic missiles, right? Those are the ones that go into, right, exo-atmospheric, and that they have, what is it called? A MIRV, multiple point entry vehicle. It basically breaks down into multiple different warheads and comes slamming down to the freaking earth. Those are extremely hard to intercept. Patriots are going to have problems intercepting. Like, everything's going to have problems intercepting those. And they're saying that they're going to be using those to go after the infrastructure over inside of Ukraine, specifically the electrical grid. And so if Russia ends up responding, they're going to be going after the electrical grid. If they go after the electrical grid, it's not just going to affect the military-industrial complex inside of Ukraine. It's going to affect millions of people across the country. That within itself is a problem. It's a huge problem. And Trump ended up coming out yesterday and stating that he wants this to end. He doesn't basically agree with everything that's going on. And he was clearly upset that all this was taking place. Now, to me, that kind of reinforces the fact, or excuse me, reinforces the rumor that the Trump admin had no idea what was going on. I know they stated that. I know that Ukraine, I heard, ended up saying that. But that, to me, is like that solidifying factor. I judge everything. I don't believe a dang thing that our government's putting out anymore. I don't believe a dang thing that the media is putting out. But I do believe in the heuristics. I do believe in judging people. I do believe in judging people by their words and their actions and checking out and seeing what they're doing. And Trump seemed pretty dang pissed off in his statement that he ended up coming out with. That to me says that they are going to be, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I think Trump's a little bit upset because he got kind of locked into this thing. He thought he could end it. Clearly he can't. And that's just how it goes. Over in Omsk, Russia, it looks like a power plant actually got hit. There was an explosion at a power plant over in Omsk, Russia that ended up shutting down a bunch of the electrical grid, or so it's being reported. I saw this yesterday and I'm seeing it again today, and I'm seeing very little reporting that's actually come out on this whatsoever. This is following, the reason I'm talking about this is because this is following Russia stating that they should be going after Ukraine's electrical grid, that they should be going after Ukraine's infrastructure. And before Russia was able to target that infrastructure, it looks like the same thing happened to them. Now, check out the lights down there blinking down at the bottom of the screen, several other things. I saw another video that legitimately showed the power, like, legitimately like shutting off going across this different area. So I do believe this to be factual. I could be wrong, but I do believe it to be factual. It wouldn't surprise me if Ukraine was behind this attack. I don't think this was some sort of a foul up. I don't think it was a mistake, this type of thing. If Ukraine was able to send out, and this is why I want to agree with Tom Bones, where he says that they can strike anytime, anywhere. I do believe that they have human assets that are on the ground over inside Russia to do things like that. Even if that wasn't an aerial attack, even if that was sabotage, that to me proves that Ukraine has the ability to do things like that anytime, anywhere. Maybe not anywhere, because those people, they have to like get in there. They're hard to come by, right? But if that was in fact Ukraine, that is a big deal. That is them answering back to Putin. I know Putin heard about it, and that's going to escalate it further. That's essentially Zelensky giving him the middle finger, saying, oh, you're going to come after my infrastructure? Here you go. Come after it. Right? See what happens. F-A-F-O. And that, again, is another escalation. People have asked me whether or not we're going to end up having, people ask me whether or not there's going to be a nuclear exchange in between the two nations, or in between Russia going into Ukraine, not between the two nations, because Ukraine gave up their nukes back in the 90s. But is there going to be a nuclear, exchange taking place in the near future? I don't believe so. Is it possible? Sure. Is it probable? No. Is it possible that they use chemical weapons such as, you know, like blistering agents or choking agents? Yes, it is possible. Is it probable? Maybe. Actually, it starts creeping a little bit closer to that, because I have personally heard reports from the front line, heard soldiers screaming on the phone as they were exposed to different blister agents and things like that. We're just not going to talk about it. That's a problem. Ukraine, in my opinion, ended up bearing one of those instances because of the location in which it took place. But I did also hear that the Ukrainians have been sourcing gas masks now for the last several months, trying to prepare themselves for a chemical weapons attack. So it is possible that Ukraine has some intelligence stating that Russia may possibly start opening up with more chemical agents on them. Russia has been documented using what do we call it? Tear gas, which is technically a chemical agent, which they're not supposed to be doing, which would be a violation of international law, all right, for this, on the front lines thousands of times. They've documented it. However, it's not risen to that level yet where, like, the international community says, you know what, we're going to intervene. You know, my concern is if they end up actually using real chemical weapons in this, I do believe that certain countries, if not NATO, that certain countries within NATO are going to respond. And the real question is whether or not NATO is going to back those countries up after they respond if Russia decides to attack them. I think it's going to push Article 5 like it's nobody's business. Good. Look at you guys over in the chat. Love seeing you guys in here. Now let's talk about the genocide in Gaza real quick. I need to address this. For those of you guys that don't know who this lady is that I ended up putting up on the screen, she's actually a very important individual. She is the former president of the ICJ. She is the president of the ICJ, and she stated unequivocally that they did not find that there was genocide in Gaza. This is something that's very important.
Would it be fair to say, and I'm no lawyer, and many people watching and listening will not be lawyers, but would it be fair to say that the key point that you made your initial order and ruling upon was whether or not there was a plausible case that should be taken on by the court of genocide in the case of Israel's actions in Gaza after October 7? And you quite clearly decided that there was a plausible case. Is it right to say that's at the heart of what you decided?
You know, I'm glad I have a chance to address that, because the court's test for deciding whether to impose measures uses the idea of plausibility, but the test is the plausibility of the rights that are asserted by the applicant, in this case, South Africa. So the court decided that the Palestinians had a plausible right to be protected from genocide, and that South Africa had the right to present that claim in the court. It then looked at the facts as well, but it did not decide, and this is something where I'm correcting what's often said in the media, it didn't decide that the claim of genocide was plausible. It did emphasize in the order that there was a risk of irreparable harm to the Palestinian right to be protected from genocide.
Wow.
The shorthand that often appears, which is that there's a plausible case of genocide, isn't what the court decided.
So there you go, straight from the horse's mouth. If you needed to hear a more clear explanation that there is no genocide occurred in Gaza, it's right there. Right? There's your president of the ICJ clearly stating that not only was there not a genocide at the time, but it was whether or not the people had a right to be heard against it, like whether their human rights should be protected. It wasn't that they had probable cause to believe that Israel had committed genocide and that they went after it, that the standard was completely and totally different. So that needs to be made perfectly, perfectly clear. All right. We got another comment that ended up coming in. I want to make sure that I can get a touch on it. Attention says, Matt, what would those concave IEDs do in water, like what is on an RPG? You know, I've never test fired a freaking RPG underwater, or any shape charge for that matter, underwater, but I have a feeling it would react very, very similar, because you still have that, number one, if it is that cone on there, let's say that that sucker is completely and totally sealed. That cone is made for standoff, right? So when it hits, it's got this specific standoff distance to be able to have that hot jet that gets formed, because it's just all of the gas compressing and shooting out. I would assess that it would act how it's supposed to until it ends up coming in contact with the water. And then depending on the depth of the water and the amount of pressure and all that other crap, it's going to end up cooling that hot jet off rather quick, but it's still going to punch a dang hole through the water as it would. I don't know how far it would go, but it should react the exact same way and direct that blast accordingly. But due to the resistance and the pressure from the water, it's probably going to kill it a hell of a lot faster. But theoretically speaking, it should work. MT says, first person I've seen show that Donahue clip after all this time. We don't hate the media nearly enough. Brother, I hear you. I absolutely hear you. Now, we should hate the media. We absolutely should hate the media. It needs to be like stated a lot that, I mean, I sat here and defended the other day the Trump administration after the news ended up coming out from Axios stating that the United States government would allow Iran to enrich uranium. And I said, that goes in complete contradictory to what the Trump administration has been saying for the last 4 months, that Iran will not be allowed to enrich uranium. In May, Donald Trump stated it. They're not going to be allowed to enrich uranium. Steve Witkoff ended up coming out and stating it. Mike Waltz ended up stating it. Trump has now stated it two times. Iran is not going to be allowed to enrich uranium. They have been very outspoken on this subject. The fact that the media doesn't fact check that and puts headlines like I ended up showing up earlier, right? Look at this headline. I mean, you don't even have to read the article. A lot of people don't even end up reading these dang things. They just go over it. U.S. offers Iran a nuclear deal allowing temporary uranium enrichment. That never happened. Each one of these newspapers needs to issue a freaking retraction. Never happened. We never offered him that deal. And yet all of these people, just based off of one line inside Axios, ends up coming out with that information. And it looks bad. It looks horrible. It looks absolutely horrible. It's slanderous, and it makes the United States look extremely weak. And that's not what was taking place. And for companies like Axios, who's based here in the United States, they should feel damned ashamed of themselves. Damn ashamed. But they won't do anything about it. Now, over inside Gaza, all right, so we're going to go from, you know, talking about everything that was taking place between Iran and Syria and all the way up over here. I went pretty heavy on Ukraine yesterday, so I want to focus a little bit more on what's taking place over inside Gaza, right? Prior to Israel going into the Gaza Strip, we ended up seeing uprisings. And when I say Israel going in, I mean launching the actual assault. We saw those uprisings from the Palestinian civilians inside Gaza, that had rose up and chose to start speaking out against Hamas. A lot of people in Israel were skeptical of it. They said that, no, that's not true. That's just a way for them to stall. That's a way for them to get like sympathy from the international community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We first saw them, all right, sparking up over in the north in Beit Hanun. Then we ended up seeing them down in the south over inside of Khan Yunis. I heard reports of them taking place over in Deir Abala, all right, central-ish of the Gaza Strip, and really close to the Nusayrat camp, which is a freaking terrorist freaking stronghold. All right, all of those locations that I've stated have historically been Hamas strongholds, and you end up having people come up and rise against them. Well, earlier this, maybe it was like a week ago, I ended up reporting to you guys that there was a group of Palestinian fighters from Gaza that were working alongside either PMCs or the IDF clearing out terrain inside of southern Gaza, and that they were helping do route reconnaissance and route clearance for the humanitarian packages that were going in. And then I showed a video last week showing this group actually out on patrol. Actually, I didn't show you guys the video of it taking place, but the group was out on patrol. I showed you this guy's head getting blown off, right? But they were out on patrol, and it definitely looked like they were being captured on Hamas CCTV, that they were stacked up outside of a Hamas house, and that they ended up already having the IEDs and stuff set up outside in order to protect it. And they ended up blowing these freaking people to bits with an IED. Now those people have come out and put out a brand new statement, which completely and totally blows my mind. The guy who's leading the charge, his name is Yasser Shabab. Said to have right around 300 fighters, by the way. They said that they have cleared large portions of eastern Rafah from all of Hamas's presence, and that they invited the residents to get their butts back in there and go get water and food and return to safety, along with medicine and shelter. They say they've got all of these things, and they ended up putting out a really well put together freaking propaganda video.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Akhwati ya jamahir shahbin al-Filistini. أن قواتنا الشعبية تعمل تحت غطاء الشرعية الفلسطينية الكاملة وبتوجيهاتها الرسمية وبالتنسيق مع الجهات الشرعية ندعو أبناء وعائلات المنطقة الشرقية لرفح بالعودة إلى بيوتهم الآمنة حيث تم توفير الدواء والغذاء والسكن الملائم والأمن.
I see somebody that just stated 300 fighters. Oh wow. But that is actually a really big deal. This is what actually turned the tide over inside of Iraq when you had the uprisings take place all the way back in 2007, and we saw the rising of what was called the Sons of Iraq. Those people are the ones that started working side by side U.S. forces doing the exact same thing that these guys are doing. This stuff is straight out of the counterinsurgency manual, all right? This is exactly what you want to see and how it's going to get done. I'm telling you. There's zero chance, besides that Hamas ended up turning down the latest ceasefire agreement, but there is zero chance that this is going to stop, right? Short of Israel pulling out of the Gaza Strip, there is zero chance that these guys are going to stop, and they're going to grow. As soon as the IDF goes in and starts securing some of these other locations and they start taking more and more terrain away from Hamas, you're going to have more people that end up joining with Mr. Shabab here. I told you guys that there would be one that ends up emerging. There's going to be one that's going to be handling stuff. There's going to be one that Israel is going to get behind, and it seems like this is the guy. He's at least going to be responsible for security inside of southern Gaza. There might be another one for northern Gaza. I understand the clans and everything else. But as far as southern Gaza goes, this guy is going to have it on lockdown. There's a solid chance that a lot of these people that they just invited to come to Rafah are going to start getting screened and are going to be asked to join the resistance movement against Hamas. Last night on this program, I ended up sharing a publication that came out from a lot of prominent communities over inside Gaza, community leaders over inside of Gaza, ended up saying that they're tired of Hamas's crap, that they're going to stand up against them, they're no longer welcome, and that they blame this entire war on Hamas. There's also people on the streets that are super pissed off and are now outspeaking against Hamas as well. So what this means is that the tide inside Gaza is turning. This also means that in the near future here, in the next couple months, mark my words, in the next couple months, you're going to actually start seeing Israeli troops fighting alongside of some of these people. You're going to get reports of them. Now, along with that, you are also going to get reports of these people shooting and killing Israeli troops and likely American PMCs. Hamas is going to infiltrate this group. It's going to happen. We saw the same thing take place over inside of Iraq. We saw the same thing take place over inside of Afghanistan. One of the most famous cases of this that I can remember was a U.S. Army officer that was actually FaceTiming with his wife when one such incident occurred. Somebody had walked in and shot him in the back of the head as he was on the computer. Hollywood Marine coming in, gifting out 20 Speak the Truth memberships. Y'all are just being extremely generous this morning. I greatly appreciate you guys so dang much. That's what's going to happen. These people are going to grow. You're going to see a massive effort of the IDF and Israel and American PMCs to get behind them. I would not be surprised one tiny bit if you had PMCs that actually get assigned to going into Gaza for the sole purpose of training these individuals so that the IDF can then take them out on patrol and start working with them. You got to understand they also need to develop a whole new set of laws over inside Gaza. Right now, in the past 20 plus years, they've been basically operating off Sharia law over inside Gaza. So there's no laws, there's no any of that crap. All of that stuff is yet to be determined. They still need to announce a political leader. There's all sorts of stuff that's going to end up coming out. But all of that, likely before the year's end, is going to come to fruition, and you're going to end up hearing about all of it. So have no fear. What's taking place inside Gaza is actually working. This is one of the main concerns. Now, here's the good news about that as well. I also said that you're going to have to reprogram a ton of these people because they've been indoctrinated since the dawn of time. That indoctrination that they had been subjected to has pretty much rotted their brains. Somebody from the outside is not going to be able to come in and change that indoctrination that they had. It's going to take people like Mr. Shabab over there and his group to start leaning, okay, on these people of Gaza, to start showing them that trust, to start showing them that they're working side by side with the Israelis and the Americans to improve their lives. And once they start getting that trust built within those people, then you're going to start seeing things come around. These are the same people that are going to take care of that indoctrination issue, the same people that are coming up out of these groups. It is about hearts and minds. It's not just a battle of physical terrain. It's about the battle of human terrain. And what I'm telling you right now is that there are signs that Israel is currently winning that battle of human terrain over inside Gaza and that Hamas is losing. I saw reports yesterday that Hamas was actually being lynched in the streets by some of the people. They're no longer putting up with their crap. Israel is continuing to conduct airstrikes. Here's one. This is a good one. How many times have we seen multiple individuals that are walking on the street that appear to be unarmed and an airstrike coming in and hitting them? This video within itself is very good evidence that every single time that you see something like this, that it's not what it appears to be. And I've said before you judge this and you look at it, you have to have the intelligence. You have to know what these people were doing beforehand. Now, without explaining to you what was taking place, I want you to watch this video. I want you to tell me what you see. Anybody at all? What did you notice in that video? I'm going to ask a question because I think it's important. Was this strike legal based off of the video? Question mark. So based off of the video that you just saw, was that strike legal? I'm going to play it another time for you guys so that y'all can watch it. Based off this video, was this strike legal? If you answer yes, say why down in the chat. Say why. Tell me why. Secondary detonation blast, bag went boom. Correct. The bag ended up going boom. Now, in Matt's opinion, you're kind of lucky that the bag ended up going boom the way it did. Here you see two more detonations that take place afterwards. You see that bag kind of flare up and a lot of that crap go off. And then you end up seeing a couple smaller ones on the ground. Most of the time, so that tells me that there's smaller devices that were in that bag, maybe one large device, right? But most of the time with an airstrike, if you're going to get sympathetic detonations, you got to have like a direct hit on them. So number one, that's one hell of a strike. They ended up getting that sucker right on top of that dude with the bag. That bag went up damn near at the same time that those dudes did. But number two, what you end up seeing is a secondary detonations that occurred on the ground, which means that they have other explosive devices within there that ended up having like a cracked casing. Maybe they ended up catching fire, enough pressure built up, and boom, Bob's your uncle. And they detonated on the ground immediately following that strike. So those things are taking place and they're still continuously ongoing. Israel Defense Force is continuing to push through over inside Khan Yunis and over inside of Jabalia. As far as casualties go, I haven't heard a heck of a lot that ended up coming out of Israel. I haven't heard of any mass casualty events or anything like that. I still don't think they've met the bulk of the resistance. Now, the reports that I got given was that over inside Gaza, Hamas is currently operating in a ton of decentralized cells over across Gaza. Unfortunately, the information that you end up getting, right, is very little when you start looking at the media and you start looking at press releases. So I'm now relying on Israeli soldiers that I'm talking to over inside Gaza. They're operating in little decentralized cells like what you just saw. Those decentralized cells are basically your hardcore believers that are out there doing the best that they can do with what they've been given. So that's another reason for those ceasefire agreements, those peace talks. If you're hoping on those, they're not going to end up coming through, in Matt's opinion, because Hamas is now basically broken apart. And a lot of people have defected. A lot of people have ran away. A lot of them are trying to get on the right side of history before it's too late, before they end up dying. Israel is meeting light resistance. They have had firefights. They have found IEDs. They found all of that crap. They are meeting that resistance, but it's not to the extent of what it was on the last major pushes that they ended up doing over inside Gaza. It's actually quite the opposite. It's slowed down. Now, that is not to say that Hamas hasn't pulled back to the center and regrouped, and that Israel is eventually going to meet like one final freaking battle of Bastogne. You know what I'm saying? Where Hamas is just trying to hold out and flexing the power and everything else. All that's a very real possibility and likely to come up in the future. But as of right now, they're making contact with small cells that don't have a lot of service and support elements that are in place. So that's what Israel's doing with over inside Gaza. Well, hello, everyone. Hello, Just Ryan. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for me on this morning's stream. Thank you guys for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. If you guys haven't yet, make sure you subscribe. Make sure you become a member of the Discord. I love you guys. I love to hear from you. I'm going to end up taking questions as long as it stays the way it is on tonight's broadcast, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you guys are unfamiliar with this channel, we go live twice a day at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Central Standard Time with video releases throughout the week. Make sure that you guys are subscribed. If you haven't watched the video on the Kerch Bridge yesterday, go give it a watch. It's a good explanation about why the bridge isn't going to collapse and how explosives work. You might think 1,100 kilograms worth of explosives is a buttload, but when you put it underwater and you put it at the size and scale that actually went off, it's not nearly enough. You need a lot more. They probably needed at least 5 more of those freaking drones to make it happen. I know the SBU said they placed charges. I'm calling bullshit. I don't believe everything the SBU says, just like I don't believe everything the United States government says, okay? That isn't to say that I don't support Ukraine. I'm just looking at the facts and the actual damage that had occurred and what may have came out from it. So, ladies and gentlemen, I love you guys. I appreciate every single one of you for your support on a daily basis.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.